Welcome back to Paths to Purpose. It has been a few months since we last released a new episode, and we are coming back today with a very highly anticipated episode on the Dobbs decision that came out this past summer. So we had originally recorded the beginning of this episode that you're about to hear that week that that decision came out. And so if you aren't aware, Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Healthcare was a decision that came out by the Supreme Court this summer that essentially overturned Roe v. Wade, which guaranteed a constitutional right to abortion in the United States. And this summer, the Supreme Court found that there is no constitutional right to abortion in the United States and kind of left things up to states' rights, which puts together a really piecemeal approach to abortion access. So, big deal, really painful for a lot of people. And this has, you know, some really long-lasting impacts on access to healthcare for women. And particularly, this will have disproportionate impacts on women living in poverty. And I'm saying women, but I'd like to point out that this is also an impactful issue for anyone that has a uterus. So not just cisgendered women, but anyone that has a uterus. So essentially the problem with this ruling is that it makes abortion access, which is a critical element of healthcare for people with uteruses, it makes it a question of where you live rather than what your healthcare needs are. And it puts the onus on the state to decide who gets what care versus between an individual and their physician. And this has some pretty devastating effects on maternal health rates and other things as well. So that's kind of a brief overview of the impact of this decision. This is something that I care deeply about as a law student and also as a women's rights advocate. I testified in Colorado's Reproductive Health Equity Act and their Senate Judiciary Committee earlier this year to codify abortion access into Colorado law. But this is just a very big issue right now in our fight for rights. So the reason that we came together as a team on this issue is that we wanted to give some space to recognize what a painful ruling this was from the Supreme Court, but also to come together and kind of talk about just how monumental this was. And so we recorded the first half of this episode, as I said, right after the Dobbs decision came out. And I'll speak for myself. I was feeling completely devastated and overwhelmed by the amount of terrible things that I saw coming out of this decision. And Mikey and Jack and I came together and we talked about things, and it's a very raw emotional response to what happened. And so we recorded that and we were going to release it. And then we decided, let's pause and we'll come back and let's have a conversation about when something like this happens, regardless of what it is, and you have all of these very raw feelings and feelings of hopelessness, how do you turn those feelings into action and into a tangible response? And Alan's going to guide us through that conversation today, because this is, I think, one of the fundamental aspects of purpose. Because I think a lot of times purpose can feel like the issue that you care about is so monumental, overwhelming, multifaceted, that you can't make change. And so we thought that this was a perfect opportunity to have a lengthier discussion on when you have this raw emotional response to something, that's one, an indicator that you care really deeply about it, which is good. But two, what do you do with that? And instead of just being lost in the emotional fatigue of that moment, how do you turn that into something powerful and something that you can really affect change? So that's where we're headed today. Right now, you're going to hear the first half of this episode that we recorded a few months ago in the summer. And then after you're finished with that, we'll come back and we'll talk to Alan about what can we do with those feelings and where can we go from here? Hello, welcome back to Paths to Purpose. Thanks for joining us again this week. This is a bonus episode that we are recording that we wanted to have more of a casual conversation with all of you listening and kind of talk about how we're feeling about certain things. We had planned these in the past to talk about like books that we're reading and things that are happening in our life that we just wanted to share with you guys. And then last week, something really important happened, and that the Supreme Court took away a woman's right to abortion and bodily autonomy in the United States. And so that feels really important to talk about this week. So we're just going to have a conversation. These are really casual and informal in comparison to our main episodes, but we thought that it's really important to actually share how we're feeling during this time. Yeah, that's what we're doing today. And Mikey, how are you feeling?
I think I can't say better because that's just simply not true, but I'm feeling and I am doing things. It was definitely a really hard moment last week. And I feel like it's kind of, some people might think that this is insensitive, but I feel like this is turning into a where were you when Roe was overturned type of moment in life. Like I was in a work meeting and we were going around our assignments and we had recently done a reproductive rights documentary. And the producer who did that, it was their turn to speak. And she was like, oh, well, you know, this other producer and I were just talking about how Roe was just overturned. And literally faces dropped immediately in the meeting. And so, of course, like I went and I like looked it up real quick and started reading. And then I turned back to my other monitor and I just see like three cameras turn off all at once. And I started tearing up in the middle of this work meeting. And it was really hard to continue on with, you know, your professional sense and everything. And then after that meeting, I just lost my shit, especially once the full opinions were released and I saw Thomas's
concurrence.
Yeah, concurrence of, we should revisit contraceptives and same-sex relationships and marriages. And that really sent me into a tailspin of like an hour where my boss was just like, I'm canceling our meetings. Like, we're done. There's clearly no work. Like, because I messaged her and I was like, I know we have a meeting coming up at noon, but I'm going to be very disheveled in that. And she was like, we're done. Day is canceled. Go do some self-care. I think that's really hard. I think that's hard for especially my generation and my age where, you know, our parents literally had more rights than us. My mom had more rights than I do currently, but it's also really hard for the future and the fact that some people aren't understanding that this is not the end, this is the beginning, and there is so much more that is to come and that can and will be put into jeopardy. And unfortunately, all of it has to do with all of us in one way or another. And that's scary. And it's also one thing leads to another. And nothing will be unscathed if I know these people in power in any way. So that's where I'm at. Sorry for the rant. I'll get off my soapbox now.
I think we're all going to rant. And that's, this entire episode is probably a rant. Jack, how are you feeling?
I'm going to be honest. When I had heard that there was the potential for it to be overturned, I kind of dismissed it because I thought, well, that's not the direction we're heading, right? Like, I did. And then I think it's been bothering me more than I've even realized. And on different levels, too, from the standpoint that I grew up in a really religious context. And so,
yeah,
you have stuff that you've gotten over, gotten past, gotten out of, right? So there's like kind of bringing up stuff from that. If you're in it, you know, that's kind of a different situation. But so there's that. And then I kind of am like, how can we not let it happen again? And what's the justice's name again? God.
Justice Thomas.
Yeah, that guy.
The real gem of the group.
When he said what he said, I'm like, well, shit, I dismissed it initially. And now I'm like, now I'm not exactly sure what else could happen. So there's more of a, wariness, paranoia maybe a little bit, but I didn't really see it coming. And maybe that's to my ignorance or whatever, but I don't know. There's a lot of different things. And so it seems like there's already been situations where there's been emergencies and things have been problematic for people who are also having life-threatening stuff happen. And I just, yeah, my heart goes out to everybody, you know? So.
Yeah. I think I have been struggling every day. It's felt like someone has died that I have intimately known. That's the only way that I can describe it, is just this immense grief that I feel. And I found out, actually, because Mikey, you texted our group and you said something that said, I am not okay. And I was like, oh no, like, because I had been watching and waiting for this decision to come out. And I had just gotten back from a run, which, like, first of all, I am not good at running. So that was already hard physical exertion that I had just done. And I came back and I just started sobbing, because it's pretty hard to comprehend the amount of people that this will impact, and particularly the impact that it will have on Black and Brown communities. And to try and conceptualize that as you're reading something that is so horrific is, I just, like, I didn't have any emotional capacity to do anything else. That's how I felt. I felt very similar, I think, to you, Mikey, in that, like, I was just like, I am not doing anything today. Like, it felt like someone died that I loved and cared about. And in a sense, it felt like me almost, you know, like, it was like, this is part of me. This is part of my life and my choices. And I feel very privileged to live in Colorado, where we have recently passed the Reproductive Health Equity Act, which means that we have the right to abortion in this state. But that doesn't make me feel better for everyone else. And that's kind of the thing that I'm grappling with, is like, what if I'm traveling somewhere and I need some kind of life-saving procedure? Will I die? Will I not? There's tons of ramifications of this that, like, I think are just so hard to process. And then, yeah, you get into all of the other consequences of these other cases that they're bringing up, that all these other individual liberty cases. And it's hard. It's really hard. And I think the reason that we're talking about it in this context on this podcast is because I think there's this generalized feeling amongst people that things are just getting so bad and you have no way of, like, contributing to the good parts of our world. And it's really like our autonomy is getting taken away. And quite literally in this case, our autonomy was taken away. But how can we, like, fight back? And I don't think a lot of us know how to do that right now. And that's kind of the point, is just calling it out and talking about it and talking about how we feel. I don't have words for this. Like, it's so tough to just have choice taken away. That's just where my brain's going, is I don't know how to mentally understand what's happening. So I'd like to call the caveat out that this is not legal advice in the sense that, like, this is what we're hearing. I have to say that because I'm in law school, and if I say things, it could be taken as legal advice and I could get in trouble for that. So caveat to all of our listeners, it's not legal advice. It's human advice. And we just had a conversation before we started recording about, like, what we're posting, what we're saying, all of this. And be careful about leaving a digital footprint if you do need access to abortion and you do live in a state that you don't have legalized access. I think a lot of states are considering enacting legislation criminalizing individuals if they cross state lines to go get abortion healthcare, which abortion is healthcare. So we, I think, are going to try to actually get an abortion doctor on here at some point in the future. So that's something that I think we're going to try and do. But as of right now, I think all of us are feeling this, just like, holy shit, what is happening? How can I protect myself? And the feeling of just, like, I have to preserve some part of control. And I think that's kind of just what we're all grappling with, is that, like, how do I just, like, preserve some semblance of choice right now? I haven't talked about this on the podcast before, but I am a survivor of sexual assault. And losing choice in ways like this is very triggering if you've experienced something like that where you haven't had choice. And it can bring back, for me, it's brought up a lot of trauma in my own experience with processing that, dealing with that, being able to talk about it. You know, all of this is intertwined in my head because it's kind of all about bodily autonomy and kind of how do you protect yourself in situations like this where you don't have the power to dictate your own rights, or, you know, in a situation like I have had where you don't have the power to dictate kind of what's happening to you. They feel very similar and the trauma responses can be very similar. So I bring that up not to say like what's happening with this is the same as a sexual assault situation or something like that, but the feelings, if you've had any kind of situation like that, might be bringing up lots of feelings that do feel very intertwined. And that's normal and that's painful, but I want to call that out because I think there's just so much that goes into processing something as monumental as this. And particularly if you have had any kind of choice taken away in your life, it feels very similar. So I just wanted to call that out. I do want to say also while we're here that we can definitely pull together some resources and put them on our Instagram page of kind of where we're seeing different places that we found information and kind of gather it and put it together if that would be helpful for our community. I also want to say if people need help, we're a very small podcast. So if you need help or like if you just want to talk, send us a DM on Instagram because it's the three of us. Like it's not, and Alan as well, but like if you want to talk to me or Jack or Mikey, like it's the three of us that are there. And yeah, we just want to be there for this community as much as we can. I don't know how helpful this was for other people, but I think it's valuable to talk about and to process together and as a community. I think we can definitely come forward with more resources in the future of like, if you want to be involved in this movement of fighting back against this, we can definitely provide more resources. As I said, we're going to try to get an abortion provider on the podcast at some point, but for now, we really just wanted to come on and talk about this and just be real, be authentic of like, this is how we're dealing with this. This is how we're trying to process this information. I don't know that any of us would say that we have processed this information, but we're attempting and that's all we can do. So, well, thank you guys for joining us. We're here. We're in it. We're doing the best that we can right alongside everyone else right now. So sending lots of strength your way, wherever you are today and whatever you're dealing with. And we'll see you in our next episode. Thanks for listening. Bye. So that was part one of this episode. That was our raw emotional response to how we felt during that time period. And now, Alan, let's bring you in. How did you react listening to the first half of this episode? And what did it prompt you to want to have a further discussion about today?
Yeah, thanks, Danielle. Thanks for sharing that with us and with me particularly. It is raw. I remember hearing it back right after this was happening and feeling the energy from that. When I heard it the first time, going way back when you first recorded it, I was struck by the amount of energy. Like there's a tremendous amount of pain that I was hearing collectively, but sort of a sense of now what? And that's what led me to say, hey, let's think about it, because we're often faced with these situations where we're driven with high amounts of energy. Usually it's triggered, but there's a lot of emotional energy, but then we don't know what to do with it. Or as I recall hearing back what you went through, this sense of hopelessness and darkness about it. And so I've been in situations like this and I've seen this play. And in this context, it was around this particular ruling. But as we've seen, we're seeing a lot of movement politically towards dark rulings from some people's perspective. We're seeing other situations where we're captured in relationships that seem dark. So the question for me in a situation like this is sort of, this is where kind of getting into the unpacking the emotions, unpacking what is it that we're feeling, but then moving it into the action stages, which I think is important so that you can get past the feeling of helplessness or darkness and kind of move it into opportunities potentially to change the power dynamics and to change the scenario. And I'll talk through a little bit of ideas on how to do that and why it's important to do that as we go through this.
I think that's really what we were missing in that first half of that episode. And I think that's important to recognize that that's a hard thing to do when you are in those emotions and feelings, is kind of pull yourself out of it and say, okay, now what? And I remember having a conversation with you, Alan, after this had happened, and you said, take the time to grieve. In this particular instance, you know, we're talking about feelings of hopelessness and grief and sadness. In general, it could just feel like anxiety or overwhelm. But in this instance, I remember you telling me, take the time to grieve and then tell me when you're ready for action. And I think that's really important to give yourself the space to emotionally respond and then come to this part where we're at now, which is, okay, let's get tactical about what we can do and where we can go from here.
I think it's important to say that emotional energy is actually really important, and it's important to acknowledge the emotional feelings you're in and not diminish them. So it's not about overriding them or controlling them or making them go away or making them feel like they're not appropriate. In fact, in many cases, it's a matter of reflecting and going, okay, this is important. And as you noted, the fact that I'm emotional means that I do care. So now what do I do with that? One of my colleagues has said too that emotions have the word motion in them, and that you need emotions to enact motion on projects. And absent emotion, you won't take motion or you won't take action. So I think it's important to first say, I am feeling something. I'm feeling something very strongly. What is it that I'm feeling? Why am I so upset, agitated, overwhelmed? Reflect on it, and then we can move into action.
Yeah. So I think that's something that we've talked around, but not directly in past episodes, is kind of this, you know, idea of emotional resonance. And I think we've talked about it in the way of trying to figure out what you care about. But I feel like the difference in what we're talking about today is when it feels like something has maybe happened to you versus having an active choice in that thing of which you have the emotional reaction to. And obviously, the painful joke of what we're talking about today is a true loss of choice and a true loss of bodily autonomy in this talk about abortion rights. But I think in general, when it feels like you don't have an active choice in something that's happening to you and you're having an emotional response to it, I think it is even harder to do what you're talking about, which is to say, have the emotional response for sure, but then to come away from that emotional response and say, now I feel energized or empowered to act on this. Because when it feels like you have that loss of rights in this instance, how do you do that? And so that's obviously what we're talking about today. But I think there's a distinction there that I think is important.
Yeah, it is definitely important. So here's some techniques that we learned. One of them I'm going to give from when I was a pilot training student in the United States Air Force, and then an instructor pilot. And then the other is also some reflection on these situations about why you've been triggered or why you've been emotionally agitated, and reflecting on who's doing that and what they're trying to get out of it. So some of this can utilize logic to evaluate, almost physically separate or emotionally separate for a moment, and reflect analytically on what's happening around you and get a meta picture of it. And that allows you to engage a little bit of a logic around the situation, which then allows you to move into action, because most action is logic-oriented, not emotional-oriented. And so action requires us engaging our logic and our analytical thinking and our planning and our organizational framing and things like that, and our ability to bring people together towards action. And that requires us to kind of somehow find a way to train out a little bit of the emotional resonance, not all of it. So when we were doing emergency procedures training in the military as a pilot, the very first thing they told us to do, which sounds almost so cliche, is to remain calm. So if there's a fire in the airplane or something like that, or you've lost control of flight, they literally say we have to consciously tell ourselves to remain calm. And that's part of it, because when you're in an extremely heightened emotional state, there is no action. We have a tendency for our bodies to shut down and almost go into like a catatonic state, or the panic is so overriding that literally everything sort of stops. And so there's no action. And so you're in a worse position in a heightened emotional state than you are engaging some logic and breathing and saying, okay, I need to stay calm here so that I can actually think my way through what's happening. So that's a bit of training. It takes a little bit of conscious training to say, I'm going to remain calm. And then the orders of the steps and the emergency procedures were remain calm, analyze the situation, and take appropriate action. It sounds really vague. It sounds very cliche, as I noted, but it really is about trying to slow time down, trying to slow the emotional energy down so that you can actually think through logic action steps. That's really what that was about. Going back to this and applying it a little bit to the political setting that you were bringing about, one of the reasons why you might be emotionally charged is because it's intentional. So I mentioned that emotional energy can cause panic and can cause people to stop acting. And so if I were trying to take control over people, I would try to emotionally agitate you. In fact, emotional agitation is used all the time. We use it in entertainment. We use it in teaching. In fact, last night, Mikey mentioned being emotionally agitated over a reality television show. Some people would call that entertaining. So we use emotional energy and we agitate for all kinds of reasons, but there are people who are knowingly, purposefully agitating to try to create fatigue. So if you're hyper-emotional state, then it triggers this fight or flight thing and it triggers this sort of catatonic and this sense of despair. It drains a whole lot of energy and it actually gets you into a hopelessness mindset, and that gives them power over the situation. And so if you look through some of the psychology literature and political psychology, and even in, you know, when you're talking about sociopaths, some of the tactics that are used are trying to agitate and emotionally manipulate people. This happens in relationships, it happens in politics, it happens in business environments, for example. So one idea is to try to stay calm and sit back and go, what's really happening here? Is this about this particular incident? And in the context of what you're talking about, it's about abortion rights and personal rights and healthcare rights. But is it bigger than that? And who's doing it? And what's their big game? And how are they utilizing emotional energy and their power dynamics? And that's one way to think about moving in there. And that allows you at least to get an assessment of the situation, which then allows us to move into an action state, which we can discuss after.
Yeah. So I just want to make sure that I'm getting the steps. So step one, remain calm. Don't freak out, which I will say as a person with anxiety is difficult. But I think that's a really important step, is to consciously tell yourself to remain calm. Step two is to recognize that there might be other forces at play other than just the immediate response that you are reacting to right now. Is that correct?
That is correct. And that's part of the remain calm. Because if you understand that in a heightened emotional state, you're not able to assess anything, that might be intentionally intentional.
So it's kind of a systems thinking approach here a little bit. For those that haven't heard of that concept before, systems thinking is you're looking at an issue with the entire system in mind, which this sounds very self-explanatory and it kind of is, but you're trying to get to the root cause of an issue instead of putting band-aids on the symptoms of the root cause. So it sounds similar to what you're talking about here, Alan, which is as hard as it is to not respond to only the moment or the really agitating event that has occurred, focusing energy instead on what is causing this and what is this the impact of, rather than only the triggering event.
Yeah, it's fundamentally, why am I emotionally charged by this event? What is happening? What has triggered me? Why am I so upset about it? What's the big picture about the action or the people or the environment that got me to this position? And what's really going on in the entire game? And that's really where I think about it. And that gets to the analyze the situation, because you get the broader picture and it gives you more clarity and it also gives you a chance to breathe a little bit and evaluate what the different paths are where you can actually make some sort of action, interference, disruption. I think the key, and this is really important because I'm repeating it, but the key in the remain calm stage is to recognize that not only are you incapable of doing anything when you're in a heightened state of emergency or state of panic or state of despair, somebody might actually be trying to place you there on purpose. And so by not remaining calm, by staying in that agitated state, by staying in that extremely heightened state, the probabilities are high that either you won't take action, or if you do anything, the odds are high that you're going to do something that is emotionally responsive, which probably doesn't mean it's the best decision. So emotionally responsive type things include everything from picking up weapons to saying things that you wish you hadn't said out loud and hurting people or something like that. So the key, I think, is to reflect on why am I emotionally charged and can I kind of take a little bit of that edge off so I can come inside the boundary. It doesn't mean shut off the emotion. It means step away from the extreme edge of that and reflect on what's really going on behind the scenes, which then allows you to take in a picture of the situation and then analyze what stages of action can come next. And we can discuss some of the political ideas in the context of what you folks were talking about earlier, or we can talk about other scenarios if you want about what kinds of actions to take.
This is the hardest thing to do, though, I think, of all of these steps, is to move past the agitation to say, I'm going to remain calm in this scenario. And like you said, it's not complete disconnection from your emotional response, but it is a separating of emotion and that feeling of calm. And I'm wondering if, before we move to the action stage, if you have advice on when you're feeling that, you know, initial agitation and that really intense emotional response. As you said, you'd learn this in fighter pilot training. How do you override your natural instinct to, I think, freak out? Because that's what I was feeling when all this happened. And even a few days later, it's like, how do I remain calm? How do I do that? And so I think that's a question I have for you, Alan, before we move to the action. It's just like, how do you start to train yourself to do that?
So one idea is it's a function of the urgency of the scenario. So you don't have any choice but to take action in a scenario where you're flying 600 or 700 miles an hour. So the urgency requires you to act and to get away from the emotional energy and the panic and move. And in the situation that you described, there's sort of, in a strange way to say this, there's sort of a luxury of time to reflect, because at least for you in this moment, or for the three of you in the moment, the urgency wasn't on top of you. It wasn't as if there was something that had to happen right this very minute for your own survival. And so a lot of it then is maybe channeling and saying, okay, this does affect my own survival or my own sense of survival. And maybe artificially you're trying to accelerate that timeline and say, I'm not going to allow this to stand because my survival state isn't where I want it to be if I allowed this to just fester in status quo. So a lot of it is the urgency of the new environment you're in to then say, okay, well, I don't have time to reflect on this. I need to act. And maybe that's a way of framing it that might help.
Here's where my brain goes with this situation is, if you've been taught your whole life by a system or relationships, parents, whomever, that in agitated states, you kind of have to remain agitated for whatever reason, for survival, for to get a different kind of emotional response from someone else, regardless of the cause. If you've been taught to not remain calm, what can we do to start training ourselves internally to kind of switch that response mechanism in our heads?
There has to be a time, if you care that much, at which point you have to say, okay, am I going to allow this situation to control me emotionally, or am I going to try to flip over the power dynamic? I've learned I want to flip over the power dynamic, particularly if I'm in that agitated of a state, I want control rights. And so I'm going to work with other people to change the environment I'm in. And that's something that I've worked on. But a lot of that comes from deciding that I get to control my emotional state. Other people's expectations don't dictate what emotional state I get to bring. That's the one thing I get to control. I can't control how you enter a room. I can't control what kind of things you throw at me. I can't control the environment we're in. But I can control my own emotional actions around it. And so I decide that, okay, I've had enough of this emotion. Now I have to reflect on, can I change the environment? Can I at least exit from the environment? Or can I engage it in such a way where I can affect change within the environment? And that's sort of the training that I've done. It does take time. One of the things too, we're going to get into the steps of moving into action, but one of the core steps is to find like-minded people. And that's one of the things that you did in that talk, was to work through this with like-minded people. And collectively, there's a lot of energy around collective action. And so one of the ways to help move in and even to stay calm is to gather a group of people who feel similarly, but don't stay there as a collective. Move into, okay, now we've kind of processed this, what are we going to do together?
I really like that. That reminds me of something my dad used to say to me when I was younger and really overwhelmed. He would say to me, control the controllables, because there's a lot that we can't control. And if you at least have some autonomy over some portion of your response, it will make you feel at a better level of regulation for yourself. So I think that that's really important. So now moving into the action stage of this process, I feel like this is also potentially really overwhelming, especially when you're talking about large problems. I remember in business school, they used to call them wicked problems. I don't know if that's still an applicable language use, but problems that are really far-reaching, multifaceted, potentially multiple different root causes. So you can't just encapsulate the problem in a really like, oh, great, this is a problem. Here's the solution. Here you go. Because when there are problems that are this large, finding a place to start is so difficult. So how do you begin that process?
So yet another reason why action never happens or is rare to happen is because people become overwhelmed, as you noted, by the enormity or the sense of enormity of the problem or the sense of hopelessness. But one of the reasons why it's so critical to think in terms of finding like-minded people is because we often need to recognize that nothing happens alone. Like everything that we build, every institution we have become part of, everything that's been created that we utilize has been built off teams. And so we can't do things alone. And so finding a group of people with whom you can collaborate is really critical. And also recognizing too, that there are people who are already involved on these initiatives. So we have a tendency to feel like we're feeling this by ourselves, but it's really easy, certainly in the context of the setting that you were discussing collectively. I mean, there's a lot of action on that particular initiative. There's a lot of action on everything from voter empowerment to hunger to, I mean, all these initiatives have action already happening. So some of the analysis might be exploring who's involved in this already. What are they doing? Where is the help needed? And some of the analysis too is what I consider to be the most critical and often most overlooked is what are the most powerful places in which you can actually apply action? And these are not necessarily the obvious things. Stated differently, where's the leverage point? And this gets into some discussion about power dynamics with respect to sources of hidden power, sources that people forget about. For example, if you want political change in the United States, people often look at Washington, D.C. But in fact, a lot of the political movement happens within the United States Senate. A lot of the leverage is in the United States Senate, and a lot of the weight of the Senate falls within a couple of states, in particular state senators. And so if one is trying to enact change in Washington, D.C., it's not entirely clear that you should be focused on the president's office. You might, in fact, want to be lobbying or working with one or two state senators. That's one example. Or if you needed to change the majority in the House or the Senate, then there are key states where that might happen. So just thinking in terms of where would my effort be best utilized? Where am I going to get the largest impact for the time? And also, what am I really capable of supporting? And so that's important too, because you will still have emotional energy. You might not have a lot of capability to act. And so the question is, what can I do instead of doing nothing? So do I have a little bit of time where I can do X, whatever X is, something small, writing emails or calling people as one example? Or do I have talents that can be utilized somewhere else where, for example, I might be able to build a website for somebody or something like that? So it's thinking a little bit about who's already doing things instead of trying to create it all on your own, which is unambiguously overwhelming.
I think the other portion of this that's important to name is that taking action in these really intense and sometimes overwhelming problems takes initiative. It's only you that can control how much time, effort, and energy you want to give to these problems or these scenarios that you have felt very overwhelmed by. And I think, Alan, that's, you know, what you talked about earlier, which is like, the reason why there's not a lot of action on things is because people just get stuck and overwhelmed. And then they decide, I don't have time to give for this, I'm just going to ignore it or whatever the reason is. But I think the important part of purpose is that you feel so compelled by what's going on that you have to act. There is no other option but to act, even if it's not your full-time job, even if it's not everything that you do of every second of every day, but doing something to touch on that thing that you really, truly, deeply care about. And so in the current scenario that we talked about at the beginning of this episode, the Dobbs decision, abortion rights, that could look like a lot of things, like you mentioned, Alan. You know, it could look like going out and finding a local organization who promotes better voting access, like you discussed, or there's different organizations within every community that are trying to increase access to abortion. Can you volunteer with them? Can you, like Alan said, can you make a website for them or like do anything under the sun that's not just like I have to switch my entire everyday life to make change on this initiative? It can be small actions. But if you're doing something, that's a step in the right direction in my mind.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be huge. I think it can be also be very therapeutic to move into action stage. And the action can be as simple as being the aggregator of all the action opportunities. So there are some people, for example, on Twitter, when things get super agitated, what I see them doing is collecting ideas for where one could actually get involved. Another stage of action might be, I'll give you an example, if there's a big protests. There's been several protests and there's a lot of emotional energy around protests and it brings a lot of visibility to an issue, but then the energy usually dissipates and all the action fades. So perhaps being the one at the protest who's aggregating ideas on what do we do next? So for example, I've seen people bring in voter registration cards to these protests or walking around saying, hey, what are you going to do with all this energy once this is over? This protest is over. Now what? And being the person who's coming up with the idea generation and or the inspiration to move others out of the emotional state and into the action state. So these are just ideas on how to make small effort to make big impact. And I think the key, again, though, is everybody will do it in their own way, but acknowledging that if you stay in the emotional state and it's at this heightened level, very little's going to happen. And I think that's really important. So recognizing that there's got to be a processing of that, and then there's got to be kind of, okay, what do I want to do about this? And how can I do it cleanly? I also want to bring up another point and recommend people go back and listen to Abdullahi's talk, because Abdullahi in his talk had spoken about his perspective on change. And he realizes that he is okay if the change doesn't happen in his lifetime. And so some of this is pacing yourself and recognizing that you can be the catalyst for the beginning of a change initiative. It doesn't have to be completed. And so taking small bites, working in teams, working with larger organizations, trying to bring people's energy into action, I think. And since the DOT Act, I haven't done enough research on all of the stuff that's happening, but there's been a lot of action since you folks taped that. A lot of action. And so one thing is clear without getting into the specifics, one thing is clear is that it has definitely created an energy where people are acting and making movements on change initiatives around that particular event.
I think there has been a lot that's happened. And I think to your point, that decision catalyzed a lot of people into action to realize that something as huge as Roe could be overturned with the stroke of a pen really, I think, woke up a lot of people. And so I think that's something that is great and sad at the same time. But I think to the point of this episode, using these moments to be a catalyst for hopefully greater change long term is always the goal. And just starting that process of not getting stuck in that initial agitation stage, if we could work towards that collectively, I think we would see a lot of really positive impact on a number of dimensions, not just the one that we're talking about today.
Yeah, if I were to summarize, in some strange way, it's good to be emotionally charged. That's what this whole podcast series is about, identifying the emotional energy, but then translating it into now what? What do I do with that energy? Because that emotional energy is sort of channeling some sense of purpose. And then how do we kind of migrate in and get past sort of this very strong emotional status that keeps us agitated and keeps us anxious and keeps us not moving. And so this is really kind of a nice summary of that in this particular context. And to your point, I think going back to my comment about urgency, survival urgency, I think the perspective that this particular episode was a catalyst, it was an urgency, I think. I would characterize it as a sense of urgency on some that, okay, now's the time to act.
I'm really glad that we took the opportunity to have this second half of this episode today instead of just publishing that first half, because I feel better about where we've left this right now. And just to summarize what we talked about today, when something like this happens, regardless of what it is, so you have a triggering event, the process that we've just discussed has three really important steps following that if you want to kind of be reflective and take action on that triggering event. So first is to stay calm. And we talked through a bit of some tactics on how to do that. The second is to recognize if the triggering event is a symptom of a much larger initiative to kind of be an agitating force and to identify what the root cause is of that triggering event that has made you so upset. And then the third is to identify ways in which you can take action on changing some element of that root cause. When we think about it in that way, when we think about the process in that way, these triggering events can become much less daunting. They don't become less painful. As we talked about, emotions are very real. They are very needed. And so I don't want to diminish at all the emotional response that we feel when things like this happen. But responding to that emotion becomes more manageable and more tangible. At least that's our hope with this episode today and sharing this message with you all. Thank you, Alan, for walking us through this. I think this is not the first time that you've walked me through this, but every time we talk about this, I feel like it reinforces that principle, and it's really important for these change initiatives that we're talking about and for purpose ultimately.
Yeah, and thanks for bringing it up and talking through this too. I think what's important is that this type of scenario repeats itself through life. And these are the stages that I found that seem to kind of work me through processing it. And I think you can find too that sometimes these triggering events are also empowering events.
Well, thank you, Alan. And thank you guys for listening this week. This is the first episode of season 3, which is really exciting. We are thrilled to be coming back with some new material, some new guests, and we are really thankful to have the Small But Mighty team that is keeping Paths to Purpose going. So thank you so much. We will see you in a few weeks, and bye for now.
Thanks for listening. This episode was made possible by our audio engineer, Jack Booth, and our growth strategist, Mikey Lulo. For more resources and inspiration on finding your purpose, check out our Instagram @PathsToPurposePod. We'll see you next time. Bye.